Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Graves, former France hooker Benjamin Kayser, and ex-Scotland back row Johnny Beattie. We've got a very special guest coming on the show this week as well, and he has got a bit more time on his hands than he might have expected, so we'll get him on shortly. But how are you guys doing, first of all? Have you had a good week?
Mate, same old lockdown, nothing's really changing. Last episode before Christmas, kids get off school on Friday, so counting down to madness, to be honest. No work, nothing's moving, waiting for this vaccine to arrive in France in 2023. I'm just looking forward to the world moving again, to be honest. Enjoyed the World Cup draw. That was great, seeing what was going to happen for the World Cup 2023. But apart from that, very quiet down in the south of France.
You did a few bits for that as well, didn't you, Johnny?
Yeah, it was good for World Rugby. They asked me to do a little bits and bobs. Also did a bit of singing of La Marseillaise with a few different faces, which was great fun for the World Cup promo. So, no, it was really nice to be part of it. It's miles away from the tournament, but just already it was something. It was something positive, rugby, something to shout about, something to look forward to for everybody. So no, it was really cool to be part of it. Shameful singing, but it was great fun.
Hear the best and worst voice, and where did you rank, Johnny, in the singing?
I was dreadful. I would say Greg Laidlaw was actually, I was quite impressed by him.
You kiss ass. Come on.
Well, he's a mate. Best backdrop probably goes to Drew Mitchell. Very good. He had the opera house in the background. That was very cool. And an absolute golden buzzer, an A for effort to Andrew Mertens, 100%. He had the French jersey on. He was ironing his French jersey on his ironing board back in New Zealand. No, he was great. I would say he definitely took the biscuit. He was first class.
Those little moments just make me get super pumped and excited about 2023. Yes. You could tell that France has got a special place in the heart of all rugby nations and all rugby players. Like Andrew Mertens, obviously, forget about Australia, but would never put any other jersey because they want to, a bit like what happened in Japan, they want obviously to experience France, experience Europe, experience our regions and our specialities and all that. And to be honest, I think there's a big emphasis put on Claude Dacier at the moment, who's the head of development of that 2023 guy. So he is Bernard Laporte's right-hand man.
Yep.
And he was already head of the 2007 World Cup that was co-hosted by Great Britain and France. And the results were fantastic, but they did feel that they didn't start early enough to actually create a huge excitement around it. So that was the first thing they wanted to do. They should have done a lot more. I think, Johnny, you went on that 2023 train, didn't you?
They
tried to do a path all around France with having Chabal and Fred Michalak and Johnny and just other players, just showing a bit of the excitement, what's the World Cup going to be all about? Because yes, the final will be in Paris, but you know how it is, those host cities, that's very important. They're the ones who are going to have 25% of the tourism and all the fans of all around the world who's going to come in. And they need to experience that from within. So I think it's a fantastic strategy in terms of communication, just to create that excitement, that buzz, and just realize, oh shit, in January, it's 2.5 years around, or it's around the corner. It's going to be tomorrow. So the same players that we're seeing now, are the ones who are going to be even better, going to be there, right? So the excitement is massive. Claude Dacier is doing a good job. You know, you can live, you can love, you can hate Bernard Laporte, but at least when they've got something in their mind, they get it, they get shit done. Huh?
Yeah.
And at the moment they're doing it great. But I was really pleased just to see again, a reminder of how close to the heart. Like we always say, world rugby needs a strong French team, right? Yes. Six Nations desperately needs a strong French team, but we're different. We play our part in this whole of craziness of rugby. You know, we bring something special to the table, and that's where I think everybody will be so happy. A bit like the Lions going to South Africa, boah, they plan it more, 80% for the trip, 20% for the rugby, right? Well, France 2023, I hope it's going to be the same thing.
Absolutely. We'll maybe talk about the pool draw itself with our guest a little later on. But I'm guessing it's been another busy week for you, Benji. Always is.
Yeah. Just European rugby. So I did Northampton, Bordeaux. Not an amazing game, but chuffed to see the Bordeaux guys playing on. And it's funny, just as a reminder, I don't think we've spoken about this, or maybe a tiny bit, but I saw Guido Petti, you know, the Argentinian second row, just walking out. And I'm thinking, blah, his head must be full of stuff at the moment. How can you just, you know, put on a brave face and keep on going? And I'm thinking, there's a lot going on. The symbolic was that he was standing, I think it was with Paeva, the Lucet prop, and Wookie behind him. So I'm thinking, those images must clash all the time. I was just thinking, imagine I'm the captain of Bordeaux and he's hugging teammates like this in a hurdle. You must be thinking about it all the time, right? I mean, it's huge. It doesn't just go in one Monday. And then he ended up getting injured out for 25 minutes. And I'm thinking, that's not down to luck, right? No. Come on, let's not wish him bad. But it's basically your brain telling you, I'm not in the right space. How could he be? You know, it's problematic. So, yeah, that on Friday, Bordeaux. And then I flew to, I did 700 flights to get myself to Paul Worcester. Hallelujah. It was actually a decent game. They played some rugby. They chucked the ball around. It was okay. And I met up with my mate, Thomas Domingo.
He's a legend.
Paul Tito and Lan Petit.
Big fish.
The former went all to get promoted into the top coaching job because they got rid of both coaches. And I'll give you an example of the forward and a back, right? Conrad Smith, who's a back, obviously. Decided to go home in February or something to see his family. Hasn't been back in Po since. Okay, because of lockdowns and stuff, he's there. He can't travel back. Paul Tito, who's a lineouts coach, sent his family back in February. They haven't been back since. He's familyless.
Wow.
And he was meant to leave last week to finally go and see them because he dealt something with the club of being like, listen, give me a couple of weeks. I just need to go and see them. So he was only Lions coach at the time. So he prepared all the training sessions in PowerPoints and, you know, he really did a thorough job. I think he's about to catch a taxi to go to the airport. And then the president calls him like, cancel your ticket, mate. We just sacked the head coach. So you're not Lions coach anymore. You're like head coach beast or whatever. And so I saw him at the game. I don't even know him really well. Like we shook hands a few nice times boy. And stuff. He's lovely. And he just rocks up and he's like, fucking hell, mate. You know, he's like, I can't do this anymore. You could tell the poor guy, the life was out of him. And he's like pulling on his mask. They don't know what this is in New Zealand. Just don't know what it is. You can't blame his family for trying to stay there, protect their kids, you know, and just pretend like nothing's happening on the other side of the world. But I just thought actually that crazy trip that was meant to be a little bit soulless, I ended up catching up with my mate, Thomas Domingo, who's a really good mate of mine. Watching a good game and then actually seeing that, which was hello.
Hey, who's this?
This is the reality of COVID. And this is Alaska. She's 3 years old. Don't be fooled by the doll face. She's a freaking torpedo.
She's feisty.
She will eat anything and she will beat up anyone. if you cross this one in the street at night, change trottoir. Because she's ruthless.
I did tease our special guest quite well at the start of the show. I said we had a special guest coming on who had a bit more time on our hands.
A very, very special guest. I was going to have her here, but I thought if you have the back sound, if it's Peppa Pig or, you know, Stickman the whole time, it might be a little bit long for our listeners. So just give me 2 seconds. I'll go sort this out. I'll be right back.
Papa. Oui. Bye, Alaska.
Bye. 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 Okay.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sorry, boys.
Well, that was great, Benji. That was that wasn't the special guest that I thought we were going to have, but a bonus, Alaska.
You can't top that one. You can't top that one. That's it. That was absolute exclusivity.
Well, let's give it a go. Let's see if he can top Alaska. And as we said at the start of the show, he has got a little bit more time on his hands than he was expecting this week after Toulouse's game against Exeter was called off. It's All Black legend Jerome Kano joins us. How are you, Jerome?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks for having me, guys.
Very good to have you on. So yeah, we mentioned it in the intro there. How did you find out about the news of the game being called off this week? And are you looking forward to a weekend off to rest the body, or is it a bit frustrating?
Well, I rocked up to training yesterday and there were rumours about some COVID cases in England, but wasn't until the afternoon where we had an official team meeting for training where the coach said that there's a possibility that the game might get called off because of the number of cases that Exeter and Glasgow have. But I haven't been training with the team at the moment. I've been rehabbing an ankle problem. But it's quite disappointing. But not much changes for us. I think we're going to keep going with our training week. And unlucky for the boys, I think we'll have to train on Sunday to replace the game that we'll miss.
Are the boys disappointed generally? I mean, it was a big semi-final loss last year. You're obviously looking to rectify that. Are the boys a little bit disappointed they don't get another bite and another crack at Exeter?
There was a sense of disappointment yesterday before training because the guys had worked up so hard to mentally prepared for this match. I think once the draw got announced, we marked this game definitely because it's still quite fresh in our memory, that semi-final. But also them being the reigning champions and also the pace they set in the Premiership and also last week against Glasgow was definitely one that the boys penciled in to try and build up for.
You mentioned, Johnny, that semi-finals. I was there in Exeter. I commentated that game. And I remember the lead-up that week, you guys were getting super pissed off about basically the sort of the COVID treatment. I remember, I think some sort of escort waited for you at the airport and then you got taken to a hotel to be in a bubble. I mean, I know for a fact that the Exeter boys were having coffee in the morning because I saw some. You know, they were clearly not in the bubble. So, and then when you got to the stadium, they were going to put you in some sort of other changing room because they said that the 2 meter distance was not being respected. I was like, the boys are going to smash the shit out of each other for 80 minutes in about half an hour. What's the point of not having them sitting next to each other? That does, for me, does not click. But just to tell you, in this thing, podcast, we try to basically set the reality of what French rugby is. And you've been there for a while, so I think you understand now. A big, big motivation, and I know for a fact, especially in Toulouse, that's sort of the Guinovese legacy. They use that frustration and that pissed offness as a fuel to get ready for a game. Obviously, you got cut in the middle because the game is now pulled out. But do you feel that fuel, the energy that Mola was like, you know, remember what they did to us? Remember what those British did to us? You know, remember what Exeter did? You mentioned, you know, the pace and how good they are on the field. okay, that's fair enough. But then there's also a lot more to it. I remember how they treated us. They made us wait. You know, that embarrassment. It's all about respect, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that add to the way we use to prepare. And that's one of them, the frustration in terms of the COVID restrictions and how we had to wear masks and film our trainings to send through to get clearance to travel. But, there are a lot of those things that the coaches and the club implemented to try and motivate us for the game. But we knew they were always going to be hard because in the Premiership and also European Cup in the past, they've always been there or thereabouts, the top performers. So for us, we're under no illusions how hard it was going to be. But I'm sure the coaches just wanted to add that extra fuel to the fire to make sure that we're extra motivated.
Some extra spice. And have you had any communication, have the coaches mentioned or the management said, look, we'll meet these guys again further down the track? Are you going to be awarded points? Have you had any communication as to what the point situation will be? Is the match forfeit by extra, therefore you're going to get the full whack and a bonus? Or how does it work for you guys, you know?
I'm not 100% sure about this, but I went in this morning and got did some rehab and we had our COVID tests. I think we have to all test negative for us to get full points. And if not, if we do come with cases, then obviously both teams were void. So we have to split the points and it would end up being a draw. So that's what I'm hearing. And I also read a couple of articles this morning, which states that as well. But not 100% sure. Haven't heard it from anywhere official yet, but I hear it a lot, so there must be some weight to it.
Yeah, I think there's an EPCR meeting as well that's been convened to discuss it. But I think you're right. If you all test negative, you could be in for a full 5-point haul. And if you get the points, then you're set up nicely, aren't you, for the rest of the campaign?
Yeah, no, it would. We're not going to say no to free 5 points. But then again, we're mentally prepared for this match, and being at home, that would have given us extra comfort as well to be able to be at our to prepare our own way in our own backyard and be at our own stadium to take on the champions. But that's people's health at the paramount at the moment.
And you mentioned you're recovering from injury, Dream. How is that going? And at the age of, if you don't mind me saying, 37, it's tough going in Europe, isn't it? It's relentless week in, week out.
Yeah, mate, it's been a bit frustrating. I think I was due to play a couple of weeks ago where they assessed the injury, but it just hasn't settled down as fast as I would like. Maybe 10 years ago, I would have did my ankle and been running around playing touch a week later, but body's getting a bit older and it's taking a little bit longer to recover. I'm feeling good at the moment. This week's the intensity in my training, my rehab training, is just bumped up a bit. So hopefully I'll be ready by next week.
Is it fair to say, Jerome, that the fact that you're playing so well and playing a lot of minutes and stuff is also down to sort of the atmosphere that's within the team and within the boys? So I know obviously I'm good mates with Ice Toyava, who's a super good mate of yours, and he's told me that. Based that you were mind blown about the team spirit and of those youngsters of what they're showing and stuff, because let's face it, you have nothing to prove. You only have to basically enjoy yourself and enjoy your rugby. I mean, I saw you play lock. I saw you play full on minutes nonstop. You could have, you know, just say, listen, my body's not ready for this. You need to pace me, whatever. And Ice was telling me that it's because you connected so well with all those youngsters in that team and you appreciate their passion, their commitment. Obviously you guys won the title 18 months ago, but is it fair to say that it's playing a lot in the fact of how much you're enjoying your time on the pitch?
Yeah, 100%. When I arrived, you're right, I was blown away at the talent and the potential that these younger boys have here in Toulouse, but also looking around at the top 14 all around the country. They're these guys at 18, 19, 20, just when they get the opportunity, they just don't care. They just want to have a go. They just want to play rugby. And for me, being around that every day here in the team environment, it gives me a bit of enthusiasm because, one, I don't want to drag the chain in the team and I don't want to show my age. But also it just reminds me that all I need to do is just go out there and do what I love to do, and that's just express myself and not worry about my age or how long I've been around. It's just to go out there and enjoy it. And that's what these younger boys do. And they do add a bit of enthusiasm to my everyday training life. But that's one side. And also we got guys that are the same age as me as well that are killing it over here. Sergio Parise is, for me, he's the form number 8 in the competition at the moment. And he's been doing it for years. So seeing guys like that definitely gives me a bit of comfort that I can still perform and get out there and do it. And also I'm playing with Joe Tacori as well. He's he's with me, and mate, that guy's a machine. I think in the last year and a half he hasn't missed the training, and he never gets injured.
He's too big, mate. How could he get injured? He just bullies everybody else. He's too massive.
He does
get
injured.
I guess it helps when you're that size, and you're. Yeah. But guys like that give me a bit of a boost.
I want to ask you a bit more about Joe, because Joe's got a wonderful reputation in France as sort of being the sort of figurehead and a sort of father figure and a boy that brings culturally and team spirit loads out of the team in terms of organizing, being a sort of figurehead. Everyone looks towards him, gets behind him. What kind of stuff does Joe bring? Because there's all this sort of myth around him. He was a cast as well before. He's a legend there as well. What does he bring on the off-field sense to everyday training and as the months go by that he manages to spark people and get people up all the time?
Yeah, he's definitely the chief here at Toulouse. The boys would do anything for him. But well, what he does on the field, that's one thing. But I think his major impact is how he brings the boys together. He's always trying to make social events for the guys. And he's always in the group chat just making sure that everyone's okay. And if the boys want to add anything to the daily program, or just making sure that the guys are connected to the way we want to do things in the team culture. And for us, that's huge, having someone like that who's been around and has connections, you know, to the foreign boys, and also, you know, speaks French as well. You know, he's been around in France for a while. It helps a lot, and it definitely adds to our team culture, which is awesome.
I've heard a few stories off the field as well. Is he among the best, if not the best, drinker you've ever played with, Dre?
100% the best drinker I've ever met in my life. I've been around some massive drinkers, but Joe's definitely probably he's at the top of the mountain. I've never met anyone like that, and I can't seem to be able to be around long enough to see him drunk. That's the problem.
Do you want to know what the biggest recognition for being a good drinker is? I think he's probably one of the guys that got called up for the British Babas the most in the last 10 years. And when he doesn't play, he still gets asked to come just to be around the boys. He is an absolute machine. He's the guy that will go out until 9 o'clock in the morning. He'll still have whatever, a stereo sitting on his shoulder, jump in the bus, and he'll still deliver a decent training. It's just he is. Just to add something to what you said, there's obviously, like you said, he's the cement, the glue. And I was lucky enough to play a year with him in Castres. I think what he did also, it's also down to his family, because him and his wife, Helen, they just opened their house to you. Yeah. So it's one thing, because my wife is English, Jerome, and basically coming to France, I guess it's a bit like you. It's easy for you to connect with the boys. You see them nonstop every day. You get 40 mates after 2 weeks. You know, it's pretty easy. But the wives, it's a different story. And what they did is that they just opened their house. They're like, listen, kids, friends, wives, just come. Everybody enjoy, have a great time together. And let's face it, Cast was not my best season. Cast is not, it's not Toulouse, it's not Paris, it's not London. But my wife loved it just because of the connections that we had with those people. And it was very, very much family orientated. And I was 99% Joe and 1% Christmas Owe, maybe. But the rest was Joe.
It's a dangerous combination, but you're right. I think the reason why the boys connect so well is because they know that the partners are taken care of, and Helen's a huge part of that. Joe and Helen do loads with the families and everything, and that gives us comfort to be able to just go to training or travel on away trips and know that our families and our partners are taken care of with having someone like Helen there.
Just going through that integration into French life when you moved over, Jerome, how hard was it at first? Obviously, it helps having someone like Joe there, but the language, the culture, the rugby, everything rolled into one. How hard was it to kind of get used to?
Hard wouldn't even be in the sentence. I've enjoyed every single bit of it. For me, it was an easy transition. I've traveled to France enough to know what to expect. But arriving here in Toulouse and settling in, it just exceeded my expectations. It was so easy to get along with the guys. I think the hardest thing for me is just the language. I'm getting lessons and everything, but just I'm not grasping it as fast as I want to. But I'm at the stage where I can understand a French conversation. It's just getting my vocab to a point where I can reply and get the confidence. But in terms of everything else, the club environment, even around in Toulouse, the town, the neighbours, everything's just been great. My family love it. My wife loves it. And would love to settle here as long as possible.
Had you always had a desire to play your rugby in France? Like, you'd obviously played in, like, you're in the World Cup over here, you had some games, you played against the French national team, you had loads of mates that were over here, but when you were playing in black and when you were back home playing Super Rugby, had you always looked forward and seen yourself playing here, or was it something that arrived out of the blue? How did it happen for you?
No, since 2011, I'd always been in talks with Toulouse, just with the connections that I had with my friends that had played here. I had Luke McAllister, who's a very close friend of mine, who played here for a while, Corey Flynn. I was pretty close to coming after the 2011 World Cup, but I had a young family then, and I still thought that I could add a little bit. So I decided to go to Japan instead of coming to France, which was a little bit closer to home. But I always wanted to come to Europe, whether it was France or the UK, just to test ourselves out. Because all the boys in the Southern Hemisphere talk about how long the season is here in Europe. And also the weather plays a big part in those conversations. But coming over here, yeah, it's a long season, but you do get a lot of breaks, and it's... I think the games that you experience with the crowds and everything, that adds to the enjoyment, and it doesn't seem as long as it is. I've enjoyed my first season. It went by so quick, and I think that's one thing that deters some players in the Southern Hemisphere from coming up here, is that they say it's a long season. It's, you play so many games, and I'm not too sure if you get a rest. But if you do, if they do come over here, I'm sure they'll enjoy it as much as they think.
So you mentioned the crowds. I do think one of the biggest assets of France is literally the country.
Absolutely. Because
whether you're in Toulouse, Perpignan, Clermont, Paris, or Biarritz or Bayonne, where Johnny is, it's just a different life, right? I mean, you feel like you're traveling from Spain to Italy, back to Paris and whatever. And then you feel that in the stands, you feel that in the crowds, you feel that in the pride that people have, you know, those when you're in Pays Basque, they sing that song. When you're in Pau, they sing something else. In Toulouse, they speak Occitan, you know, and we're very, very proud of it. So you mentioned that. Obviously, it's going to, I don't want to speak about the game because it's still sore. But if you remember the title 2019 that you guys deserved to win and you guys won it in fair play, if you talk about the celebrations after, because Toulouse is pretty hot, if you compare that to 2011, bringing the World Cup back in NZ, is there some sort of, obviously a World Cup to a Brennus is different, I get that, no problem, but the passion is so huge in Toulouse. I'm sure that you were blown away by the reception of the fans, right?
Yeah, 2011, that was special because it was being at home, and obviously it's a World Cup and it should be big, but that celebration in 2019 at the Capitals, it was crazy. I was blown away. I'd heard a lot of stories from like Clem Potrino and a lot of the Max Meda, a lot of the ex-players had said, you better prepare yourself for the celebrations. But the way the city got behind it, and just seeing red everywhere in the city, it was crazy. And I don't think I've ever experienced something like that ever. And that gives me a bit of motivation to try and replicate that hopefully sometime soon. But yeah, you're right. The atmosphere that you experience at the stadiums, at the games, it differs from club to club because they have their own songs. They wave their big flags around. And I guess that adds to the enjoyment every week when you go out there and play.
In terms of integrating, you said you found it easy on the sort of off-field side. People were grilling, really welcoming. How did you find the on-field stuff? Ugo Molle as a coach that has evolved massively over the years. If you watch his team from Brive and how they played to what you guys do now in Toulouse, the template that you have and the players that you work with, how enjoyable is the on-field stuff? Like, you look like you're having the time of your life, still running around like a spring chicken, but how good is it playing that rugby with Toulouse?
On the field, it was a little bit harder than I thought to start off with, but then I got used to it. In New Zealand, they always say play what's in front of you, but to a certain extent, because they're very structured. I came through a system where everything was structured to a certain point, and then you just back your skills. But here in France, it's play what's in front of you from the get-go. And I'm not used to that. I wasn't used to that kind of play where you just back yourself from the first phase to however long you have the ball. And I had to sit back and watch a few trainings to see how the boys adapted to it and how they do it. And it didn't really suit me at first, but and then I found that I just needed to go out there and enjoy myself. Like, there was no such thing as a wrong decision. I'm enjoying it now. I think they've brought a lot more structure to the way we play now, and the younger boys that have come in, they've added to it. So for me, playing around like guys like Romain Intermac and Antoine Dupont, I always have to be on my toes. Oh, also someone like Cheslin as well. You always have to be on your toes because you never know what they're going to do, and all you have to do is just be ready to react to anything they do or the breaks that they make.
But see, Mola, from a coaching perspective, does he basically just go out and say, back your skill set and do whatever you want? Because the amount of offloads you guys chuck that I'm like, this is going to go wrong. Or you watch that game against Ulster, pouring conditions, but, you know, Antoine Dupont is still trying things, still trying to force 3-on-2s that a lot of coaches would say, no, handbrake on, don't try that. Is Ugo just like, go for it, have a field day, back yourselves and go and have fun? Or how does it work? Because some of the stuff that you throw together is ridiculous.
Well, they're really well organized with the way they want the boys to play. They have a structure, but there are certain situations where they're like, you've just got to back yourself here. And a lot of the forwards are just like, oh, if we've got Cheslin, Roman, and Antoine there, we've got to make sure that we're always on the move. So, I love the way they want us to play and they want the team to play, and especially from props to the number eight, everyone's got to have a certain amount of skill set to be able to play that style. I think it's not exclusive to Toulouse. It's the way a lot of the teams play here in France, and it's great for a spectator to be able to watch and see, because there are some freakish things that happen.
You mentioned Dupont and Intermac. I was one of the first guys to be like, let's take a step down with Dupont. Give him time, you know, to actually learn the trade. Phenomenal athlete, incredible player. But number nine is more than that, right? He's got to have the strategic kicking game. He's got to have a bit of a clearer head on things. At the moment, even a shit kick, he'll just jump, gather it, and then step somebody and score, right? So he's doing my head in, because he's basically performing on any situation. I have to admit, in the last 6 months, I think that both of them, especially Entamac also, they've really reached a level that I think is pretty awesome. I mean, they're delivering on international stage. They're connecting better. I don't know if you saw the France-Ireland game, the last Six Nations game, and I thought Entamac had his best game under the blue jersey. Really did everything. You know, he really had a bit of everything. So again, I don't want to rub them again, because they have enough good press, but they're not going to listen to this. So you can slag them if you want, or you can praise them if you want. But honestly, like, bottom of your heart, how good do you think they are compared to nines and tens? And you've seen some pretty decent nines and tens in your career. How good can they be, or are they at the moment?
I think Antoine Dupont's the best halfback in the world at the moment. The way he's been performing the last year and year and a half, where everyone says...
Cut that. It's enough. You've heard enough.
Like, everyone compares him to Aaron Smith, and I think they're two totally different players. Yeah. Just the amount of rugby that Antoine's had, and each time he goes up there, he's there or thereabouts to play out the match every game, and the standard he's held. But, Aaron's been playing well as well, but I think that Anton's been the best halfback in the world the last year. But where they can go from here, I reckon they could both be best in the world in the next 5 or 6 years. Roman, he's still got a lot of movement to go, but he's playing awesome rugby at the moment. So both young guys, but definitely mature heads on their shoulders, which is quite encouraging to where they could take their potential.
We've obviously just seen the pool draw for the 2023 World Cup. So Intermac and Dupont are going to be 9 and 10, hopefully, for that French team in 2023. Have you had much banter in the dressing room now that you know there's going to be another French-New Zealand clash? How's that going in the changing room? And what do you make of that clash? So I've been saying the past few months, I would love to see Toto Dupont go up against Aaron Smith. I think that's the clash everybody wants to see. And everybody loves the history between the two teams as well. The clashes you've had at World Cups in quarters and in finals, they've been amazing to watch. So have you had any back and forth in the change room? What's been said? And are the New Zealand public a little bit worried about coming up against France in France?
No, there hasn't been much banter in the change room.
But, I don't believe you.
I could guarantee you that there will be a bit of spice to the next New Zealand French encounter. I see that they might be touring here next year, November, which would be interesting. But yeah, we're always worried every time we come up against France in a World Cup, whether it's pool stages or even knockout stages, because we've got a history of getting knocked out or getting beaten by the French at World Cups. But I think it's going to be an interesting one. Playing France in France is a totally different story. And with the history that we have at World Cups, I'm sure the French public are going to get behind it. And it's not going to be easy for both sides. But both teams have a lot of time to prepare and there's a lot of rugby to be played before then. But I think the mental warfare until then, it's going to ramp up every time.
You just crashed in my rankings because you bluntly lied to us to say that you were worried to play against France in 2015 World Cup and the quarterfinal. That's not true, mate. You guys whipped our ass 60 points. We were knocked out of the park by a way better team. So maybe actually you're being super humble and modest, but that's the reason why you whipped our ass is because you took it very seriously.
I tell you, for us to put in that performance, it was a week of a lot of soul searching, a lot of looking back at past games, and the trainings that week were pretty ruthless. So, we wouldn't have put a performance in like that if we weren't worried. So, we had to make sure that we're on our game. Otherwise, history would have repeated itself.
On a side note, I think it's actually the best draw for France you can have because that guarantees you of not playing the ABs in the quarters. And I played the 2015 World Cup where we had Ireland. And basically, we knew that in the pool stages, either you were going to play Ireland, either you're going to play Argentina. And everybody was praying not to play the ABs of that last game, basically. And we lost a close loss against Ireland. So for 2023, if you want to be the best, you're going to have to beat the best at some point. That's no problem. Yeah. But the quarterfinals is different. You know, you still have two games to play. It's a bit different. So I think it's actually a very, very good draw for the French. And it might be the opening game, right? So that will launch the World Cup sky high. It's good actually for both teams. You can the ABs want to win it. Well, they'll know actually if they can really deliver something or not. France want to win it. Well, that's challenge. You know, they were one of the best teams in the world, and actually get there. So I do think actually it's a great draw for both teams.
I've played them in Paris on an India tour, and it's quite intimidating having the crowd getting behind you and getting behind the French team. But to play here in France in a World Cup game, I think that atmosphere is just going to ramp up. It's going to be quite an intimidating place to play.
And talking about the All Blacks, Jerome, and your massive history with them and the young French talent in Toulouse and France at the moment, is there anything that you've brought to Toulouse in terms of either the culture off the field or on the field from the All Blacks and from New Zealand that you can kind of give us an insight into?
I don't think I've added too much. I think for me, my sole focus was to make sure that I perform well before I implement anything into the team. I think I've worked more with the coaches and in terms of scheduling. One thing I kind of feel like I add is that when when teams do well here in France, at halftime there seems to be a hell of a lot of talking, a lot of excitement, and then if you're not doing well in the first half, you get into the changing room and it's the polar opposite. Guys are just quiet, heads are down. And I think for us more experienced guys in the squad, it's just to find that balance, that whether you're not going well or you are doing well, just to keep a medium, making sure that everyone's got to process it in that period, at that halftime period. Because even though you're doing well, you get in there and there's a lot of noise. You seem to skip past the things that you need to improve on, that you need to do. But also, if you're not doing well and you get in there and it's quiet, guys seem to drop their heads and you don't go out there and do what you need to do.
Hang on, we've got a special guest again.
He's back.
Both special guests on at the same time. Alaska, have you got a question for Jerome?
I think she would ask if he's got the chocolate cake or something. That's about the only question she would ask. I think what you guys brought. I'm a huge believer in culture, values, interested in leadership and all that. And I know for a fact that you guys, the ABs, have really put a lot of time and effort into transforming the ABs from within. And you know, swiping the sheds. Clermont, we started doing it because we copied the ABs. 100%. I'm not afraid of saying it. But I think it's a fantastic statement to say, listen, this is how we're going to lead. We're going to be humble enough, hungry enough, curious enough. I think that's your main contribution to Toulouse. It's just who you are as a bloke, how you behave and stuff. Then the pitch is one thing. But how you behave off the pitch and with the boys, I think that's your biggest contribution.
It's pretty cool to hear it from you. Yeah, I think a lot of the players, I don't know where the All Blacks got it from. I think we got sweep the sheds from somewhere. But I was blown away by... When we come here in France, the players get a lot more than what we get in the summer in New Zealand. Like, we guys have to do their own laundry and then after training. But here in Toulouse, you just put your clothes in a sack and then the old laundry man does it for you. And I think in New Zealand we have to make sure that we earn those privileges to get them, and I guess that's one part of it. But here in Toulouse, the young kids coming through, they're quite appreciative of everything they get, and they make sure that they earn their respect before they do things. So I don't feel like I had to do anything to make the movement on that side of things. But no, it's great to see that a lot of clubs are implementing that kind of thing. But yeah, here in Toulouse, it's been easy. There's so many great guys to get along with, and team culture has been awesome.
You've had some impact so far, but you're off contract in 2021. I was going to ask you, have you had any discussions about re-signing and staying on and extending the journey or moving on elsewhere?
No, I'm done playing after this year. When you know it's time, you know it's time. And I'm just going to enjoy as much as what's left of the season in terms of playing. But I've expressed to the club that I'd love to live in France for as long as possible. I've enjoyed the city, and we're just in talks and hopefully joining. I'd love to work with the academy here in Toulouse with the Espoirs, and the game's given me so much. So it's I'd love to be able to somehow give back to the game that's given me so many opportunities, and hopefully I can pass on some of the knowledge that I've learned throughout my journey.
That's great to hear. And awesome. You mentioned already that you've been working with the coaches, and perhaps that's where you've added more already. We had Joe Rokothoko on before, and he was saying when he first arrived in France, the coaching level was maybe not where it needed to be. And it was maybe at the kind of level he'd experienced at under 20s in New Zealand. Obviously, in recent years, it's moved on more. But just wonder what you've made of the coaching, particularly. You've given us an insight kind of so far into it. It's more heads up rugby, but yeah, what do you feel like you've added in that respect, and where do you think the coaching is at the moment in France?
Oh, when I first came, I thought the coaching was at a high level. It was quite awesome. It's quite different to New Zealand, because New Zealand coaches have their different style and everyone adapts to their style, but also it's the ideas are quite similar in New Zealand, because how the All Blacks play is how majority of the Super Rugby teams play and how they're coached. But here in France, here in Toulouse, I saw that a lot of the coaching ideas and the game plan structure were worked around the players' strengths. I think they put a lot of time into who we've got on the team, who we've got on the roster, and each player's strengths, and they built the game around that. And I didn't think I needed to add much to how the game plan needed to be. I think it was more in terms of little things we can improve in the forwards. It's hard to try and improve things when coaches put so much time into players' strengths, weaknesses, and they built the game around that. And I think it worked. And it's working at the moment because the coaches are still trying to evolve our game, evolve the way players play. And it's been awesome for me to be able to sit back and learn.
And you've obviously come over to the top 14 and had a massive impact. Why do you think we don't see more French players go over and play in Super Rugby maybe? And is that something you'd like to see more of? Is that something you could maybe encourage a few of them to go over there without flogging Toulouse's players to the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, it'd be great. I think it's, for a young player, it's always great to get as many experiences as possible. And likewise, the other way for Super Rugby players to come over here and experience the style of rugby over here, because for me, if I came over earlier, I would have been blown away. Just the crowds, the style of rugby and the life that you live. But for a young player here in France, I don't see why not, to be able to go and experience Super Rugby and learn a different culture and learn a different style of rugby. I think it would only benefit them in terms of not only just the rugby side, but in life.
Definitely. I mean, I would have loved to see some guys and experience it from inside. I thought you were going to answer that it's actually hard for provinces to, or Super Rugby franchises, to take on foreign players if they're eligible for the ABs. But if it's possible, then that would be amazing. I mean, you're very well connected, obviously, with the Blues and that, what's the name of the Harlequin Center? Joe Merchant?
Joe Merchant, yeah.
So I saw he just went. Apparently, he was killing it. And he's only came back as a better player. So it is possible. Yeah. Can you tell us like how that deal came across, if you know? And if you don't, who would you like to see in France you think could really benefit from taking a year and going down there from your Toulouse mates, maybe?
I don't know how the Joe Marchant deal came along. I think he wanted to change and he wanted to experience something else. But I'm just glad he chose the Blues instead of any other franchise. But yeah, there are a lot of players here in Toulouse that I would like to see go over there. But for me, it's more of the forwards and some of the players. I'd love to see Sele Tulafua go to Super Rugby and try it out, because he's special.
He's a beast.
He's loves to play, backs himself, and for me, I'd like to see him go and try it out with some of the loose forwards in New Zealand, see how he goes. But I think he's going to be in the French team for a little while yet, if they give him more time. But for me, I think he's quite a special kid.
He's deceptively strong and good, yeah. Right? Cyril Bailly, Julien Marchand. So extraordinary powerful. They know their stuff, right? But I think for them to become the best in the world, they would fit so well in Southern Hemisphere, just to actually learn a different trade, especially Cyril Bailly. I mean, he's one of the strongest scrummagers you'll find. He might need to lose a few pounds, fair enough, okay? But still, I mean, he can shift that way. It's not a problem, right? And I think Southern Hemisphere will probably teach him, and especially NZ, will teach him a lot in terms of skills development and all that.
I think their skills are pretty impressive, those two front rows for some big boys. They're quite mobile and they love to just carry the ball and express their skills. And Cyril Bailly, he's special as well. But I would love to see those two go to the Southern Hemisphere and test themselves there. But definitely, I think those two are pretty mobile for front rows, the way they do things and throw the ball around.
I think there is an official relationship between Harlequins and the NZRU. So maybe we've created another one here between Toulouse and the NZRU. Jerome, you're up for that?
Let's hope so.
Now you're going to be head of academy. You've announced it here. Head of academy and S-Bars at Toulouse sets up exchange program with Blues Rugby. But I was going to ask you as well. So you're Samoan descent. and you just signed up. You're in the Pacific Rugby Player Welfare Board member. Dan Leo is doing a power of work as well. Another man that's played in France, an absolute legend over here as well. The Oceans Apart film is outstanding. But I wanted to ask you generally just on your thought on governance, finance, Pacific Islands rugby, where it is now and what needs to be done. There's obviously a massive gap and a huge hole that needs to be helped and filled so that Pacific rugby can flourish properly. Generally, it's a big question, but what do you think needs to be done so that Pacific rugby can get to where it needs to be?
Mate, it's I'm learning so much being on the board and learning from Dan. But in terms of what needs to be done, there's so much that needs to be done, and I don't think it's a one conversation fixes all type thing. I think there's so many issues in terms of even playing field, in terms of the island nations, getting them more exposure to the top teams, and also revenue share in terms of the games that they play. They're never going to improve if they don't get the funding from the top level games that they do get, and the small amount of games that they do get, and also the treatment that they get when they do go to World Cups and competitions with the small turnaround, a few days turnaround that they get between games. And But I've learned so much from Dan and the rest of the guys in the group in terms of how things have been going. Like for me, being in the Southern Hemisphere for a long time, you do get noises about what happens to the players because you have a close connection to the boys that play in those teams, but you don't actually know what happens to teams that come over to the UK and play England or Ireland and how the how does some of the players are, going into their own pockets to pay for their flights to even get on a tour. So, there's so much that needs to be done, and hopefully I'm part of a group that can help get more exposure to those problems.
I was going to say, because you're involved, aren't you, in that Kanaloa Hawaii group with a few other former players. Yeah. I know there were rumours that they might be going into MLR and maybe not. But how important is that to get a sort of franchise where that could really help, couldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be great to have a franchise to get more exposure to island nations, island players who don't get the opportunities, who don't get the exposure to come here to France to be able to play and then ultimately get selected for their countries to play. So to have a franchise based in either New Zealand or Australia to help bring those players up, it's going to be hard for the island nations to be able to get exposure because they don't get as many test matches or other competitions to be involved in to be able to build their player base.
And one of the major talking points when it comes to Pacific Island rugby as well is the eligibility rules, where you might get a player winning one or two caps for New Zealand and then that's it. Have you got any views on, obviously it's different for you personally, but for a guy like Charles Pietau, for example, have you got any views on that, what the eligibility ruling should be?
Yeah, I personally would love for the eligibility rules to be loosened up with players who only have a few caps and haven't played for a couple of years on the international stage to be able to have the opportunity to play for their home nation or their country of birth. Oh, I guess it just adds to that competition, and it also gives a bit more strength to those island nations who don't have those home competitions to be able to breed their players. I think it would only be a good thing for world rugby, and it would improve the level that those island nations perform at.
I couldn't agree more. I actually don't understand why world rugby did not step on it. If you say that those players, imagine Charles Pietau being involved with Tonga, right? I mean, if you say that they can do that 2 years before and that they could potentially steal the spot of somebody else, that's different. But if you allow them just to go to the World Cup, I do not understand how they not agree it straight away. Like, a guy like that, surely everybody wants to see him on the pitch, right?
Yeah.
Surely he can only bring to the team, bring to the competition in general, bring to the fans, bring to the excitement. So that I didn't understand. So you mentioned, obviously, share of revenue. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that documentary is heartbreaking. When you see the Fijian guys filling 90,000 people in Twickenham, they make $5 million. And these guys will get, the equivalent of $45, considering they had to pay for the flights, okay? But it's not only them. I mean, I was with the Argentinians for a while in Leicester and in France and stuff. And Marcos Ayers had a big lucid. He used to get
I think it was 1,800 pounds per week missed by Leicester. And then he would get a bonus of $450. So it used to cost him a grand every time he went to play for Argentina. And they would cry before the anthems. And they would cry after, you know, they're super passionate. So it was a matter of heart more than anything. But to bring it to the club level, there's a lot of young Islanders or South Africans or just international players that come to play in France. Do you reckon there's enough of a setup to... I don't know why. Maybe it's I'm putting people in categories, but I just feel that we've sucked on the youth and the talent of Fijian rugby in France for a long, long time, and those guys can come and be completely disconnected to the way of life in Europe. And I feel that if you send them back, if it doesn't work, because sometimes shit happens, and they go back, we haven't helped them enough. It's a bit unfair, basically, to disconnect them from their roots 10,000 k's away. Use them for their body and for their rugby skill. And if it doesn't turn out good, not to have that support network. I just want to know, do you see that in France happening at the moment?
I personally haven't seen it, but I have heard a lot of stories about it. And I'd love to see the education, also that support system for the players who'd come directly from the islands, live in a totally different culture, different country. And if things don't work out, they're just shipped back and then there's no real support network for them. I guess for us, the Pacific Island players' welfare, I think we're trying to bridge that gap. But I think definitely the clubs do have a responsibility to make sure that the players are educated, but also have their support system that if things don't go the way they plan, that they do have a soft landing, or they do have something else to be able to go back to. Now, that's why I'm quite keen to push a franchise or a competition back in the islands, that if they don't make it in the big leagues here in France or England, that they do have a competition or something to be able to go back to hopefully boost their chances of making it somewhere else.
I know there are a few clubs in France that do it, Benji, so it's by no means just Clermont, but obviously because of your involvement with Clermont have an academy set up, don't they, in Nadroga?
In Nadroga they do, yeah. But it's, I mean, so listen, the whole thing happened that since Napoli and Alaga rocked people's lives in Clermont, scored 105 tries for this club, transformed the team, got the first title in 2010, contributed to getting the first title in 2010, they really saw basically the potential. What I know for a fact that it's an exchange of giving opportunity to players. So Alivieri Tiraka, Pesili Yato, Tui Kuvu, who's now in Brive, all those guys came from Nadroga. But also, we send kits. We send the head of academy goes roughly twice or three times a year to actually give some training structures and to try to pass on the knowledge. So they're trying at least to do it a little bit better. And now the new thing is because of the French Pacific Islands, there's a New Caledonia, you know, Wallis and Futuna and all that. So there's the French Islanders is absolutely huge, and they're all playing in the French team now because they've got a God-given talent that is just extraordinarily perfect fit with rugby. Rodrigue Netti, who plays in Toulouse, Movaka, who plays in Toulouse, you know, Vamaina, that are playing a long time, the Taofi Finora brothers, Celio Tolofua and his brother who plays in Toulon. I mean, they've got Moefana, that center, that nobody knew who he was 3 weeks ago, who's just so good. They've got incredible talent, and they are French. So it's the same idea. Guys who live in the islands deserve a shot if they want to come. Because there's no real rugby structures in the islands at the moment. But I think it's too selfish and too narrow-minded to think that you can take somebody from 10,000 Ks, bring him to freezing cold Clermont. If it does work, look, Raka is French. He's married to a French woman. I don't think he's ever going to go back. And he's a great dude. Pesili Yato is fantastic. But there's not only success stories. Mm-hmm. There's also bad stories, like for everyone, anywhere. And I just feel that they need to give back, like you said, a support system. I think you've touched something important, maybe education. They can come. It could be a failure in rugby, but it could be a success in terms of a degree or an exam or something that they can learn while they're over here, you know, and bring it back for them. Something given to them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, thank you ever so much for joining us, Jerome. And that may be an insight into what you do when you hang up the boots at the end of this season. Maybe you can get involved in that as well.
Maybe, if I can get on the field again. But no, thanks for having me, guys.
Pleasure, thanks mate. Very Thank much. You very much.
Good luck with the injury recovery as well, Jerome.
Cheers, guys.
See you soon, mate. Thanks a lot.
See you, fellas.
So he's really tight with Ice, really tight. And so he's told me a lot about him. I barely know him. I've spoken to him a couple of times. That's it. And then after the 2019 final, so he's double World Cup winner, right? He's got 80 caps for the ABs. I've never spoken to him. He's the first Toulouse guy. There was a Toulouse guy about to congratulate them to win the Brennus and stuff just after the final. And it was my last final game. And he pushed a guy away. He's like, somebody was going to jump in. He pushed him away. And I saw he pushed somebody else and he came to see me. He's like, congratulations on a amazing career. And he really took the time, you know, to actually thank me. And I don't know him. And I think, shit, he's a big dude. You know, he's a proper legend, if you know what I mean. I didn't mean big dude as physically. Obviously, he's a big fella.
He's like a cupboard as well. He's massive. Of course, but he is. Yeah, he's a of nice course, guy. Yes.
But I thought, he's a genuinely top dude.
And very, very interesting to hear, Benji, that he hasn't been in France that long, a bit more recently than a few others that we've spoken to, but already planning to stay and wants to work behind the scenes at Toulouse.
It's amazing. It is a bit of it's a success story, okay, what he's doing. So he arrived with the incredible CV, but there's a way to address it. So he says he fell in love because he's mega humble. He fell in love with the young players. They bring a lot of passion. Okay, I've heard from everybody in Toulouse that he's been a legend. All right, he's contributing a lot to the content. He's contributing a lot just by being an incredible bloke, leading by example on and off the field. You know, one never complaining. Imagine. So if Jerome Kano says, "Yeah, all right, I'll play second row, no problem," and delivers a good game, that means all the youngsters next to it, they're like, oh shit, I better roll my sleeves up and contribute to the team, you know? And that's how we lead. So it's been a success story, I think, and so Toulouse are trying to give back as much. When somebody gives as much, you want to give back. So it is absolutely delightful to hear him speak so positively and to feel that him and his family could see themselves stay. It's a very fantastic testament for Toulouse and for France in general.
It was really interesting as well that he said that they'd been in conversation since 2011. So they had their man. They knew that he was the way, because everyone knows, like, rugby's a small world. You know the guy's incredible. You know what he does on the pitch. Get into him, try and get him over. They've done so. But now for Toulouse, if they do get him to stay, be head of academy or defensive role or something, can you imagine the young kids coming up getting to work with him?
Yeah, it's
that's
it's,
your head of your centre formation is Jerome Kano, World Cup winner, 80 caps for the ABs, absolute legend, amazing bloke. I mean, it's incredible for the club, an absolutely huge, huge steal for the club. But, you know, they worked really hard at it. They did, so fair play. Since 2011, working hard, grinding, trying to get him over. Imagine Luke McAllister and Nems Tialata will all be in his ear as well. You know, come on, it's an amazing place. But wonderful for those kids if they get him to have as their inspirational leader and a guy that can lead their trainings. I mean, that would be incredible for them. So wonderful for Toulouse, for the club.
Brilliant to have Jerome on. He wasn't in action for Toulouse at the weekend when they beat Ulster, but a great win for Toulouse and a great win for the French clubs in general. 7 of the 8 in the Champions Cup won, and all 4 of those away from home. So I just want to ask you generally, because we're all about dispelling myths, as you say, Benji, can we put that one to bed finally now that French clubs don't travel well? Can no one ever say that again?
Absolutely. But to be honest and to be fair to people, it's a recent thing, right? It hasn't always been the case. But the teams who want to take on European rugby, Toulouse, Racing, Clermont, Bordeaux, La Rochelle potentially, they know that that's the way to do it. So it's also learning from your mistakes, being open-minded, and just adapting to the competition. But I'm sure you're going to ask me about Clermont-Bristol. I was absolutely delighted. Big, big achievement. So Bristol without Radradra, okay, is maybe not the same Bristol, fair enough. And I think Pat Lam will be fuming because he said that he was angry against the Fijian squad for playing him 80 minutes when he had a dead leg or a bad knee that then pulled him out of the game. Okay, fair enough, but still, huge performance. 50 points. 51 points, Bristol in Bristol. That is big. Matsushima is just unstoppable. Oh. Damien Penaud, remember?
Oh.
Don't skip past Matsushima. He's proving you wrong a little bit, isn't he, Benji?
I have to admit. No, I completely have to admit. I had my doubts, and he's just delivering. From what I hear from the boys, he was very into his shell at first, and now he's gradually getting to loosen up a bit and to be himself, and apparently he's a lovely bloke. I think he is much better at fullback than he is on the wing. But I have to admit, listen, I will bow down and admit that I was wrong. He is bringing so much to this team. He's incredible in attack. He is very, very good. Let's not forget, and that I did say a couple of weeks ago, Damien Penaud is a freak of nature. And when he will be back, he will bring so much, and he's delivering.
But then the team. So this is why I don't understand. This is the again, another thing we can talk about in France, the mentality of a team. The team that we saw the first five, 6 weekends of top 14 was not Clermont. That was not the same team. Look at how they're performing now. They look like they are world class. They could go on and win this competition. Whereas the first five weeks, we were like, who are these guys? They've like never
Ben,
seen each
other. Do you know what they changed? They spend time together. They build the team spirit. They did David Stretto. Off rugby. They didn't go to Barcelona, Ibiza, because they weren't allowed to travel. But, you know, they spend time together. They actually worked on them, on culture, on values, on leadership group, stepping up a bit, on getting to know each other. They had a few issues also, you know, they had to fit everybody on one boat because of some senior players who were a little bit angry. People will need to come out of their shell, and I'm super happy for them. They tackled a beast. The beast is to actually create a team spirit. You think it's super easy? It's not. It takes a long time, and it's very, very complicated. You can lose it quick. Building a strategy and skill is the icing on the cake, right? But building drive and passion and commitment and brotherhood, that takes time and effort, and that's what they did.
Another guy I want to mention that we haven't talked about too much, but again, Fritz Lee, that guy's a freak show. Like, so Jerome was really, you talked about Parise a little bit. You got Parise, Kano, huge back rowers. But Fritz Lee, for me, since the time I've been in France, so 2012, for me, I think he is the best number eight that I've played against in the top 14. He is an absolute freak show in so many different ways. The way he carries the ball, defends, crucifies people, competes for the ball. Again, he was top, top class of the weekend. He was freakishly good. And somebody that nobody really talks about. You listen to commentary.
Trust me, in Clermont, we thoroughly talked about him.
He is unbelievable.
He's been one of the best players, if not the best player of Clermont of the last five, 6 years.
He can do everything.
He's incredible. So in Clermont, there's a board, big board that they carve the names of best young player, revelation, best spirit, and best player. And I think he's got best player three or four times. Voted by the team vice captain. He was captain in 2019, and Jerome was the captain of Toulouse in 2019 final. So that's to tell you how important he is. He is an incredible bloke, and I can guarantee you that we'll have him on the podcast very soon because he's a lovely, lovely guy. Fell in love with France. He will not say a lot because he's incredibly humble, and he'll probably, like Jerome, chuck it on everybody else. But he fell in love with France. His last daughter is called Margot because he loves red wine like me. He's a top dude.
Benji, I want to take a step back. We talked about the away wins there briefly. Do you think that this is a déclic, a change in the way French teams operate and how they approach away games? Because for me, I think that the secret to this year and all the away wins in top 14 and in Europe has been COVID. We haven't really talked about it, but because there's no crowds, there's no atmosphere, there's less intimidation, French teams are now winning away from home in top 14 and in Europe. But do you think now when crowds come back, this is something that's going to carry on? They realize it's now possible? Because it's been something that's missing. They've been stigmatized for years. You know, they don't try away from home. They put out a B team. Yeah. They're going to come over here with a bomb squad. It's never going to work. But now, actually, for the first time in decades, we've seen French teams in France and in Europe dominating away from home. So hopefully it can continue. What do you reckon?
I couldn't agree with you. I think it will continue post-COVID when the crowds are back. I think it's down to foreign input. So guys like Jerome just stepping in and speaking about mentality and what it takes basically to win away. It's also down to teams who want to win in Europe, so they have to adapt. To be honest, I played 8 years or 9 years in Clermont. We never sent a B team. We always went away. So we beat Munster and Munster. We beat Leinster and Leinster. We've beaten teams. And then in top 14, you would replicate and still win away. Racing are starting to do that. Toulouse have done that, obviously. And so these teams who know how crazy important it is to win away in Europe, replicate that in top 14. But now, because there's so many teams who can compete in top level Champions Cup, there's obviously so many teams who can do that in top 14. So I've mentioned the three, but there's La Rochelle, there's, you know, potentially Montpellier, Stade Français. There's a lot of teams who can do that. But I agree with you, it's gone now. It might not be the case for the bottom of the top 14 teams, but I think that is sunk into the minds and the heads of top 14. You can only express that by showing the new French team. They went to beat Wales in Wales. That is a hell of an achievement. They almost won. They should have won. They could have won, whatever you want to say, England and England with a rotated squad. So it's now within the French gene, definitely.
And we mentioned a very good weekend for the top 14 teams last weekend. You mentioned Clermont against Munster just then. We mentioned Clermont winning in Munster with Nick Abandonen last week. The big one this weekend is Clermont-Munster, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to be massive. Absolute shame not to have any fans yet. To be honest, I'm not so aware of, maybe you guys can fill me in, of the Munster form at the moment. I think they've been a little bit up and down. I know they had some crazy good signings with Dialende and the ginormous second row, but he's injured.
They've been up and down in recent years, but they've won every game so far this year in the Pro 14. But Europe is a big step up for them. And the coach admitted it last week.
There's also a different level. Like when you're beating Zebra, Treviso, yeah. Glasgow under strength, like it's different. Obviously, there's a difference in the pools. But coming to Clermont, playing in Clermont's a different level. In terms of the depth and the power, like and the organisation Clermont now have, I think that'll be a stretch too far for this Munster squad.
Yeah.
I want my TV.
Oh, COVID.
Before we sign off, we should give our special guest the final word, shouldn't we, Benji? Is Alaska's there in the background? Do you want to say bye?
Alaska's there. She's been good, but now do you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye. Yeah.
Did you hear that?
We did.
Comment t'as-tu dit au revoir? Lulu, tu dis au revoir? Voilà. The proper accent from Clermont.
Awesome.
We will let you go and have some quality time with Alaska. Thanks very much, Benji. Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Jerome. And a massive thanks to our second special guest, Alaska. Thanks to everyone for listening as well. And make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a review if you can, and we'll be back with another episode after Christmas, won't we? Having a bit of a break.
And Merry Christmas to everyone. Joyeux Noël.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, guys. Have a good one.
Fuck!